Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM. Let's create.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
You know how some people just do so much stuff that they cannot be contained in one podcast episode?
I do.
It's happening today.
Yeah, this is a fertile ground of information.
I know. So I feel like sometimes we talk about scientists whose achievements are particular to one field.
Yeah.
Maybe not like the exact same narrow field of study, but at least in the same basic neighborhood of science.
Yeah.
The person that we're going to talk about today and in our next episode is Luis W. Alvarez, and he was a physicist whose broad interests wound up connecting him to some of the 20th century's most history-making moments, including the bombing of Hiroshima and the assassination of John F. Kennedy. His work was just so diverse and groundbreaking that he was nicknamed the Wild Idea Man of Physics.
And rightly so. As if that all wasn't enough, he and his son also did groundbreaking work into the history of the world. They came up with what's now accepted as the most sort of popular theory on what happened to the dinosaurs. So we're already all over the map.
We're really all over the map, yeah. Because of the breadth of his accomplishments, we're going to talk about him in two episodes. And so in this one, we're going to talk about his early life and his education, which, as scattered as it was, became really formative in how he wound up approaching the world of science.
Yeah.
We're also going to talk about some of his more theoretical work in physics. So that would be a really dense place to end the episode. So that we don't leave on that note of here is some physics that many people will have trouble understanding. We're also going to talk about some of his groundbreaking work on radar during World War II, which is much easier to talk about in a practical way. In the second part of the episode, we will continue to talk about the World War II story with his work in the nuclear weapons program before we get into this unexpected role that he grew into that is sort of a scientific mystery solver.
Again, all over the map.
I know.
It's like if it's one of those biographies that if you just read it out of context without knowing who this person was or even the particular world events, you would be like, this is the wildest fiction ever. Does this author have no direction?
Well, and we are in the very lucky position that he wrote an autobiography, which you can get and read. And he was a character. So I recommend that if you find these two episodes interesting. There is so, so, so much more. Because even with two episodes, there are various side trips and other ancillary things that we are going to just skip completely over because there is too much.
Yeah. So let's start at the beginning.
Yeah, he was born in San Francisco on June 13th, 1911. His parents were Walter C. and Harriet Smythe Alvarez. Most people during his life called him by the nickname Louis, and that just feels a little familiar to me. when you see him, when you see his name in academic writing, he's called Luis, but his friends called him Louis, and just because that nickname feels a little familiar, we are going to stick with Luis today.
And his grandfather on his father's side was born in Spain. And he lost his parents at quite a young age, and he moved to Cuba as a teenager. And from there, he moved to the U.S. and became a doctor. And his mother's family was actually from Ireland, which is kind of a fun combination.
Yeah, so he had Spanish and Irish heritage. Luis's father was Walter Alvarez, who was a noted physician who did medical research in the mornings and worked in family practice in the afternoons. Walter became a research physiologist at the Mayo Clinic and worked as a clinician there after the Great Depression. And after he retired, he wrote a syndicated newspaper column and became known as America's Family Doctor.
And one piece of advice that Walter gave to his son, in Luis's own words, were, "My father advised me to sit every few months in my reading chair for an entire evening, close my eyes, and try to think of new problems to solve. I took his advice very seriously and have been glad ever since that I did."
This was definitely great advice.
It is.
When Luis was very young and living in California, he had to stay in bed for about a year because of a suspected heart condition. During this time, his mother taught him at home, and that went on until he got to about second grade.
Luis was interested in science and electronics from a very early age. He would go to the lab with his father, and he liked to use the tools in his father's shop to make circuitry. When he was 11, he and his father made a radio together from a kit, which doesn't sound like a big deal today, but radios were not everywhere the way they are now. They weren't easy to assemble.
This is a couple of years ahead of radios becoming ubiquitous.
Yeah.
So they were still kind of a new technology in the household at that point. When he got to high school, Luis went to Polytechnic High School rather than going into a college prep program, even though his plan was to go to college. And this was because of his love of electronics and mechanics. He could focus a lot of his study at this high school on those more practical skills. And he was one of the few students enrolled there who was pursuing a more academic program rather than a straight-up technical one.
Luis was actually still in high school when his father got the job offer at the Mayo Clinic, and the family moved to Rochester, Minnesota, from California, where they had been living, in February.
It's a big change in their lifestyle.
Yeah, so a winter move from warm and delightful to the more northern parts of the states, which get very, very cold. Is a pretty huge gear shift.
It went from sunny and beautiful to cold and snowy very immediately.
And he enrolled in Rochester High School, which did not have the same technical focus as Polytechnic High had. So Luis got an apprenticeship in the Mayo Clinic's instrument shop. And his father, who noticed his love of what he was doing, got one of the Mayo Clinic's machinists to tutor him on the weekends as well. So he was really able to maintain his mechanical interests and keep up with that study, even though his school wasn't focused on mechanics.
Here's a story from his high school days, which I think really sums up his character and his attitude of what scientists are all about. And this is in his own words. "In Rochester, a friend and I used to climb the buildings under construction, usually by sneaking past the guards in the middle of the night. We climbed the 300-foot clinic tower when it was only a skeleton of steel beams. We explored the powerhouse and scaled the inside of its 200-foot brick smokestack. I mention these escapades not to brag about being a scofflaw, but only because I'm convinced that a controlled disrespect for society is essential to a scientist. All the good experimental physicists I have known have had an intense curiosity that no keep out sign could mute." I know. He's a troublemaker.
Yeah. It's a little charming. You know, everybody loves a little bit of a, like, smart rogue.
Yeah.
But, of course, sometimes you have to follow the rules. When Luis started college at the University of Chicago, he had planned to major in chemistry, which is what he studied until his junior year. But it turned out he didn't really like chemistry. He liked the lectures, but he described the labs as, quote, repulsive. In his junior year, he took a class called Advanced Experimental Physics, Light, which he described later as love at first sight. He had made B's in all of his chemistry classes, and he came to hate the idea of being a B chemist when he felt like he could be a grade A physicist. So he changed his major to physics and made up for the lost time by taking 12 physics classes in 5 quarters, which makes my head spin a little bit to think about, and poring over textbooks to make up for the physics lectures that he wasn't able to attend in his earlier years because he was in chemistry.
Yeah.
That's a lot of hard science crammed into a very short period of time.
It is. And I like changing your major, because it was during his junior year. It was not prior to his junior year.
Yeah.
It was during his junior year that he actually completely changed tracks, had to make up for a lot of lost time. He graduated from the University of Chicago in 1932, and he went on to get his master's and PhD from there as well. And he got the PhD in 1936. He wrote pretty candidly about how this education didn't, on paper, prime him for what was to come. When you look at all of his achievements that go on for pages and pages and pages, it seems like he must have had just an exceptional education. The word he used for it was atrocious. He had very little theoretical physics work compared to the other physicists who were educated at the same time. And his PhD thesis, for example, was on the diffraction of light. And this was not particularly groundbreaking or notable. And it also just came from an experiment he had actually been working on earlier in his graduate work. Was not a clear indicator of the greatness that was on the horizon.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because it seems like he worked so hard to cram so much of the physics study track in, but yet he felt it was fundamentally pretty worthless.
Yeah, well, and that continued on through his graduate program. He also talks about how his graduate advisor was the perfect advisor for them because he just never checked on him and had no idea what he was ever working on. He just made his own educational path, doing whatever he wanted, as long as it was hardcore study of physics.
Love it. He did get married. He married Geraldine Smithwick just after he took his oral exams for his PhD. And the plan had been for the two of them to go abroad for a year for Luis to continue his study. His Spanish grandfather was going to pay their way. But just as their wedding date was approaching, his grandfather wrote again saying that, in fact, he should not come. At this point, it was 1936, and the Spanish Civil War had started. So for them to travel there was really not the smartest plan.
Right. It seemed like no longer a wise plan. Fortunately, physicist Ernest Lawrence offered Luis the opportunity to come to Berkeley to work with the cyclotron, which is a type of particle accelerator, in the radiation lab at the University of California at Berkeley. So the wedding went on as planned, and Luis and Geraldine later had 2 children. They were Walter, who we'll talk about later in this episode, and Jean. They also, sadly, had another daughter who died at birth.
Luis spent almost all of his career from that point in California, so the move to Berkeley kind of really settled him in one place. Although there was some time during the 40s when World War II brought him to the radiation laboratory of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and then the metallurgical laboratory of the University of Chicago and then the Los Alamos laboratory of the Manhattan District. He was kind of touring all of the labs of high science.
Yeah, during World War II for sure. A lot of his earlier career had to do with areas of physics that are interesting to other physicists.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
They are kind of hard to apply to everyday life in real-world terms that non-physicists are likely to understand. And please understand, I say this as a person who loves science. I'm not ragging on the world of theoretical physics at all. But we are not going to go into giant detail about these achievements because they are really dense
yeah.
in terms of their physics knowledge. I felt very self-conscious about that fact. And then I mentioned them to the boyfriend who in fact has a master's degree in engineering. And he was like, no, that is hard.
Yeah, well, it also reminds me of Stephen Hawking's famous quote about when he was writing A Brief History of Time and how people told him for every formula you include in your book, half of your audience disappears.
Yeah.
Like there's just, physics is a little bit, it's challenging to grasp and it's exciting work, but it's not always easy to suss out if you're not really educated in that realm.
Yeah. He gave this address to Berkeley students in 1968 that has a quote in it that I think applies to what we're about to talk about. And he said, "People often say to me, I don't see how you can work in physics. It's so complicated and difficult. But actually, physics is the simplest of all the sciences. It only seems difficult because physicists talk to each other in a language that most people don't understand. The language of mathematics." So for the next few points, we are going to be talking in a language that only physicists understand in as simplest terms as possible, because it really, like, these were notable achievements, and we would be leaving important stuff out if we did not mention them.
Yeah. One of the things that we're going to touch on, Luis co-discovered the east-west effect in cosmic rays. And that's the fact that different numbers of cosmic rays reach the Earth's atmosphere depending on which direction they're coming from. So
to sort of summate it into a long story short scenario, this provided evidence that cosmic rays include positively charged particles. There was very little known about cosmic rays at the time, and most scientists had actually theorized the opposite.
Yeah. He proved lots of people wrong. In 1937, he gave the first practical demonstration of K-capture, which is a phenomenon in which atoms decay by absorbing an electron from the lowest electron layer, which is called the K-layer. They absorb that electron into the nucleus. This was a phenomenon that had been theorized before but not proven, and he published a report showing everything about it in 1938.
Along with Felix Bloch, he created a method for producing beams of slow neutrons, which allowed them to measure how powerfully magnetic neutrons were, which was very cool.
Along with his student Jake Wines, he developed a mercury vapor lamp that used the artificial mercury isotope 198 mercury. The U.S. Bureau of Standards adopted the wavelength of light that comes from this lamp as an official standard of length. And as a side note, which may explain some things about him, he also used mercury lamps while working on his doctoral thesis, and his lamps would just sort of blow mercury everywhere on a regular basis. He joked that this ought to have made him mad as a hatter, and also that perhaps it explained some things
so maybe it did,
about him. So maybe
in
it
fact,
did
make
do
him
that.
Mad as a hatter.
So yeah, those are the highlights of some of the more esoteric physics work that he has worked on.
Thanks to World War II, Luis left California for Cambridge on November 11th of 1940 to work on the development of radar technology at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And there he played a role in the development of a microwave early warning system, or MEW, which allowed the detection of aircraft when it was too overcast to see them, and the Eagle high-altitude bombing system, which allowed bombs to be dropped on targets the crew on the plane couldn't see. But he left MIT, where those projects were being developed, before either of them had come to fruition. They weren't completely finished when he exited.
He did make some major contributions to radar technology while at MIT, which had a meaningful impact on the Allies during the war. One was the Vixen radar system, which was named because it let American pilots outfox the German U-boats. So for a while, Allied airplanes had been able to use their radar to detect German U-boats, so that then they could attack the U-boats while they were surfaced. Because unlike today's nuclear submarines that can stay underwater for a really long time, submarines at the time had to come to the surface on a really periodic basis. It didn't take long for the Germans to figure out what was up and to put radar detectors into the submarines, which would warn them of the incoming plane a long time before the plane could actually detect the submarines. They were getting serious advance warning of the incoming threat.
And aboard the U-boats, the crew would decide whether to dive or stay where they were based on the way the strength of the radar signal changed. But if the plane had a Vixen system installed, the signal read as though the plane was flying away rather than getting closer. And this innovation, of course, made it possible for Allied planes to destroy U-boats from the air again. It made them sneaky in a whole new way.
Yeah. This had to do with math that...
I like the reverence and slight fear with which you say the word math.
Math was never my strong subject in school. I tried really hard to come up with a great analogy to explain exactly what this math was. And if you have one, you may write to us and help us out with that, because that I had a hard time quantifying that with something that made sense. So we're just going to say magic. We're not really going to say magic. It was, in fact, science and math. His other big contribution to wartime radar was not nearly as easy a fix as the Vixen system was. During World War II, returning aircraft, especially in the UK, really frequently faced horribly treacherous landing conditions because of the weather. And a lot of times the situation was worse because the airplane was damaged or had injured crew on board. So unlike in the civilian world, where flights get canceled because of the weather, you can't really do that during a war, and there often was not a different place to land that had any better weather conditions going on. So they really needed to find a way to help planes land safely.
Radar was being used to track enemy planes. Luis thought it should be easy enough to use that same technology to track friendly planes and therefore be able to guide them in safely for landing. So instead of using it to track and evade, they were going to track and guide.
Yeah. And this is something that happens all the time now.
Yeah.
Like, that is not a thing that we even blink at, but this did not exist at that point. And it turned out to be a way more complex project requiring a lot more trial and error than the Vixen system had been. They started out just by talking a blindfolded pilot through walking around on the floor of the hangar to sort of get a feel for how this interaction would go between giving somebody instructions verbally and having them change what they were doing.
And I think we've all done that as part of like a game or like a party activity.
And we're doing that in middle school.
Yeah.
We had to write directions.
It's tricky.
Yeah, it is tricky. We had to write directions of how to get to the cafeteria from the classroom to give to a blindfolded person. And then we all got horribly lost in school. So they went from that to using tests with a small radar device and a set of optical devices that would let the people on the ground figure out the angle of the airplane's approach and use that to give direction. A test pilot named Bruce Griffin practiced getting closer and closer to the ground without using any visual cues, while his radio man, who was in the plane with him, acted as a backup just in case. When he finally got all the way to touchdown with no visual input, acting only by instructions from the ground, everyone celebrated and were like, all right, we're ready for the next big thing.
But
that did not go so well.
When they tried that same experiment using an actual anti-aircraft radar, it failed completely. The radar system kept locking onto the actual airplane and the airplane's mirror image under the runway surface.
Not a good plan.
No.
For that. Everyone was really enormously disappointed by this failure. Scientist and investor Alfred Loomis invited Luis to dinner at the Ritz-Carlton in Boston and basically gave him this ultimatum that he could not go home until they figured out how to fix this problem. Together, they worked out a narrow-beam radar that was too small to have the mirror image problem, and they combined that with an antenna configuration that they thought would actually work.
And along with an engineering team at MIT, Luis made a prototype of the ground-controlled approach system. He called this work one of the happiest times of his life, and the result was so promising that the Royal Air Force actually asked for more of them. Since the same tools could be useful for U.S. forces, of course, the U.S. Air Force and Navy got development underway as well.
Yeah, this new system worked a whole lot better, and once it was ready for use in 1944, the whole thing was so highly classified and valuable enough to the war effort that the Royal Navy transported it across the Atlantic Ocean during this very meandering route that took 3 weeks to do, with D-Day actually happening while they were in the middle of the voyage. They were trying to evade enemy submarines through this long and circuitous route just to get the technology to the other side of the ocean.
And after that first unit was in place and the technicians were being trained on how to use it, factories scaled up production so they could be able to make more of them and get them installed at all the airfields that needed them. Luis also spent about 6 weeks in England helping to get the GCA going.
Although the war was in its later years by the time the ground-controlled approach was really in full swing, it went on to have further military applications after the war was over. And it's credited with saving the lives of many, many pilots and crew who needed to land during bad weather or for some other reason involving low visibility. Luis wound up receiving multiple awards and honors for this particular accomplishment.
And as a side note, one of the radar specialists who also worked on the GCA was Arthur C. Clarke, whose book Glide Path actually drew from the experience and included a character that was modeled after Luis Alvarez.
Yeah. On another side note, Luis also had a love of aviation himself. He owned a Cessna 310, and he logged more than 1,000 hours as a pilot between the 30s and the 80s.
And that's sort of the pause point for part one of Luis Alvarez. There is a great deal more to come.
There's so much more. I'm
Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance. Helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet, and also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
So I think you have a touch of listener mail for
us. I do. This is from Amanda. Amanda says, "Hi, Tracy and Holly. I just listened to the ice cream episode and heard the discussion about George Washington. He was absolutely my favorite president, and I just had the opportunity to visit Mount Vernon. I wanted to bring a slight correction to what you said. George Washington's dentures were not wooden. They were actually made of metal and teeth of humans, animals, and ivory. They weren't all that attractive and probably still hurt a lot, but definitely not wooden. We saw the actual dentures, and I can attest that they aren't pretty like today's teeth or dentures are, but I guess they served a purpose. I can still understand why he might have eaten $100,000 worth of ice cream to soothe his sore mouth, though. They look like they would hurt. Thanks for the podcast. I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to it. Thank you, Amanda."
Yeah, I'm picturing those dentures.
Yeah.
In my head, it's a little Clive Barker.
It sounds kind of torture contraption to me. Yeah, we've gotten a couple of letters about George Washington and his teeth. And I think in the episode, we say that it's wooden teeth mythology.
Yeah.
But then we went on to talk about how his teeth were really bad without actually saying what his teeth were made of. So yeah, we know they weren't wooden. But we didn't really know exactly what they were until this letter.
I did not know animal teeth were in the mix.
No. Or a lot of metal.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound fun at all.
I think I had heard before that there was metal involved, and I knew that there were human teeth, but I had not ever heard about the animal teeth.
Yeah.
Like I said, in my head, it becomes a little Clive Barker.
Right. So thank you very much, Amanda, for writing that to us and telling us some more about George Washington's fake teeth.
Yeah.
If you would like to write to us about this episode or anything else we've discussed, you can. We are at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/historyclassstuff and on Twitter at MissedInHistory. Our Tumblr is at missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we are pinning things away on Pinterest. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about what Luis Alvarez spent some of his career researching, you can come to our website and type the word radar in the search bar. You will find the article, How Radar Works. You can do that and a whole lot more at our website, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Netflix streams TV shows and movies directly to your home, saving you time, money, and hassle. As a Netflix member, you can instantly watch TV episodes and movies streaming directly to your PC, Mac, or right to your TV with your Xbox 360, PS3, or Nintendo Wii console, plus Apple devices, Kindle, and Nook. Get a free 30-day trial membership. Go to www.netflix.com and sign up now.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.